had every reason to distance himself from Bohm. On the other hand, when Bohm heard of a teaching opportunity in Brazil, Oppenheimer wrote him a strong letter of recommendation. Bohm spent the rest of his career abroad, first in Brazil, then in Israel, and finally in England. He had once deeply admired Oppenheimer, and though over the years those feelings had turned to ambivalence, he never held Oppie responsible for his banishment from America. "I think he acted fairly to me as far as he was able to," Bohm said. Bohm knew Oppenheimer was under a great deal of strain. Shortly after the news broke about his HUAC testimony against Peters, Bohm had a candid conversation with Oppie. He asked why he had said such things about their friend. "He told me," Bohm recalled, "that his nerve just gave way at that moment, that somehow the thing was too much for him. I can't remember his words, but that's what he meant. He has this tendency when things get too much, he sometimes does irrational things. He said he couldn't understand why he did it." Of course, it had happened before, in his interview with Pash in 1943 and his meeting with Truman in 1945, and it would happen again during his security hearing in 1954. But, as Bernard Peters observed to Weisskopf, he, Oppenheimer, was obviously scared to tears of the hearings, but this is hardly an explanation. I found it a rather sad experience to see a man whom I regarded very highly in such a state of moral despair. Just 6 days after his HUAC testimony in early June 1949, Oppenheimer returned to Capitol Hill to testify under Klieg lights before an open session of the Joint Committee on Atomic Energy. The issue at hand was exports of radioisotopes for purposes of research in foreign laboratories. In a contentious 4-1 decision, the AEC commissioners had approved the exports. The lone dissenting commissioner, Louis Strauss, was convinced that such exports were dangerous because, he believed, radioisotopes could be diverted for use in military applications of atomic energy. Shortly before, in an effort to reverse the AEC decision, Strauss had publicly testified against the exports in a hearing before the Joint Committee. So when Oppenheimer entered the caucus room of the Senate office building, he was aware of Strauss' concerns. But he did not share them, and he now made it clear that he thought these concerns foolish. "No one can force me to say," he testified, "that you cannot use these isotopes for atomic energy. You can use a shovel for atomic energy. In fact, you do. You can use a bottle of beer for atomic energy. In fact, you do." At this, the audience murmured with laughter. A young reporter, Philip Stern, happened to be sitting in the hearing room that day. Stern had no idea who was the target of this sarcasm, but it was clear that Oppenheimer was making a fool of someone. Joe Volpe knew exactly who was being made a fool. Sitting next to Oppenheimer at the witness table, he glanced back at Louis Strauss and was not surprised to see the AEC commissioner's face turning an angry beet red. More laughter greeted Oppenheimer's next statement. "My own rating of the importance of isotopes in this broad sense is that they are far less important than electronic devices, but far more important than, let us say, vitamins. Somewhere in between." Afterwards, Oppenheimer casually asked Volpe, "Well, Joe, how did I do?" The lawyer replied uneasily, "Too well, Robert. Much too well." Oppenheimer may not have set out to humiliate Strauss over what he regarded as a minor policy disagreement. But for Oppie, condescension came easily, too easily, many friends insisted. It was part of his classroom repertoire. "Robert could make grown men feel like schoolchildren," said one friend. "He could make giants feel like cockroaches." But Strauss was not a student. He was a powerful, thin-skinned, vengeful man, easily humiliated. He left the hearing room that day very angry. "I remember clearly," said Gordon Dean, another AEC commissioner, "the terrible look on Lewis's face." Years later, David Lilienthal vividly recalled, "There was a look of hatred there that you don't see very often in a man's face."